So we have now 2 weeks till Shavuos, so I wanted to enter into Shavuos mode for the next 2 weeks. I guess, a public service announcement. We will have class next week. The following week is Erev Shavuos. There won't be class Erev Shavuos, but there will be class next week. So 2 weeks, we'll take a day off to get ready for Yom Tov. Next week. Okay. Next Wednesday. Okay. Good. So two public service announcements. Excellent. So the holiday of Shavuos, if everyone saw the email I sent around, I called this class the mysterious side of Shavuos. Because Shavuos is, in fact, in the Torah, a very mysterious Yom Tov, the way it's presented. If I asked any of us here, if I said, why do we celebrate Shavuos, what would everyone say?
They
got the Torah. Right, that's what we all would say. Which is what the rabbis tell us, and which is what the dates seem to match up. But I see you're shaking your head.
We have Shavuos because it says count 49 days and have Shavuos.
Okay, there you go. I mean, when you look at the Torah's references to Shavuos, the Torah never connects Shavuos to the giving of the Torah. Every time it's presented, it gives you some other reason for the day, but does not mention at all that the day of Shavuos is the day of the giving of the Torah. Now, if one opens up Parshas Yisro, where it describes the giving of the Torah, the day, math works out that the 6th of Sivan is the day the Torah was given. So it's clear that it was the day the Torah was given, was the 6th of Sivan. However, every time the Torah refers to the holiday of Shavuos, it refers to it in a different context. So I just want to go through, I'll just show you a few of the places where it's referred to and how the Torah actually describes Shavuos. The first reference you have to Shavuos is in the book of Shmos, Parshas Mishpatim, and it says, "Mechag HaKatzir Bikrei Ma'asecha Asher Tizrah Ba'asadeh." So it talks about the three pilgrimage holidays, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. It refers to Sukkot as the holiday of the harvest, when you bring in your first fruits that you planted in the field. So it's the harvest holiday. That's how it's referred to in the Parshas Mishpatim. And it describes it as one of the three pilgrimage festivals where all of the males would have to go up to Jerusalem to the Beis Hamikdash for the holiday in the times of the temple. So that's the first reference we have. One of the commentaries there describes, the Chizkuni describes that the time of the harvest was a very joyous time, especially in agricultural society. Everybody's working many, many months planting and farming their fields. Finally, they get to harvest the crops. It's a very joyous time, as we can understand. Even nowadays, we're not as involved in farming, but we should also feel joy when there's a good harvest and we have food to eat. You know, and God forbid there are famines around the world at certain times, so there's not enough food. Now we have the benefit of, you know, importing, exporting food, so things are a little bit better at some points. But overall, the harvest time is a joyous time. And therefore, that's one of the reasons given for Shavuos. You move on in the Torah to the Parshas Kisisa. It's also in the book of Shmos. So it says, Chag HaShavuos Taseh Lecha Bikurei Katzir Chitim. You should make the holiday of Shavuos the time of your first of the first harvest of wheat, the beginning of the wheat harvest. So again, this is the first time you find it called Shavuos. It doesn't call it the harvest holiday, it calls it Shavuos. But it doesn't say because the Torah was given, it says because it's the time you harvested your wheat. So that's the holiday. The first fruits, the wheat harvest and the first fruits, Shavuos is associated with that, because Shavuos was the time where people started bringing their bikurim, their first fruits, to the temple. It's a mitzvah that every farmer brings their first fruits to the Beis Hamikdash. And secondly, the offering, there's an offering on Shavuos referred to as the Shtei Alechem. It was an offering of two loaves of bread. And that was the first, when that offering was brought, at that point they're allowed to use new crops in the temple service. Until that point in the year, you're not allowed to use new crops in the service of the temple, you have to use the old crops. But once you bring the offering of Shtei Alechem in the Beis Hamikdash, they're then allowed to use the new crops of that year for the temple service. So again, you find Shavuos discussed, but associated merely with the harvest and not with giving the Torah. You move on into the book of Vayikra, and this is actually in last week's Parsha, Parsha's Emor. And then it discusses what Art pointed out, which is that Shavuos is the holiday which marks the end of the counting of the Omer. It says that you should count for 49 days. On the 50th day, you should celebrate Shavuos. That's what the Torah says. And it tells you these are the offerings you bring on that day. It should be a holiday. You shouldn't do any work. But it associates it now with the counting of the Omer. And you started the second day of Pesach, you counted 49 days, day 50 is Shavuos. Again, no reference to the giving of the Torah. You move on into the book of Bamidbar, Parshas Pinchas, where it describes the offerings that are offered on holidays, the additional holiday offerings, the Karban Musaf. And there it just says, of Yom HaBikurim, the day of your first fruits, bring the following offerings. And then I think the final reference you find in the Torah to Shavuos is also has in the context of counting the Omer. It says you should count for yourself 7 weeks, and then you should have the holiday of Shavuos. So every time the Torah mentions Shavuos, it's either in regards to the harvest and the first fruits, or in regards to being the culmination of counting of the Omer. But never does the Torah ever link Shavuos with the beginning of the Torah, which is extremely mysterious, because it happens to be on the date of the giving of the Torah. An event of that magnitude, when God gave the Torah on Mount Sinai, you would think a holiday, and it is, the holiday is marking that. I mean, it's a coincidence on the same day. So why does the Torah kind of hide that fact when it's presenting the holiday to us of Shavuos? It's a very, very curious thing.
Is that could one reason be that if we only emphasize the receiving of the Torah, then we're not paying attention to all the other good godly things that we have in life, like the harvest and like we to offer the first fruit?
So you mean we would ignore the harvest
even
and
that
focus
much more
on
than that evidently we already are by
Your point's a good point, but I would respond in two ways. Number one, how can we ignore the giving of the Torah? That's number one. And number two, the other holidays are also aligned with the agricultural cycle. Like, for instance, Sukkot is a time of gathering in the fruits.
Right.
And yet we also mentioned Sukkot is a time we mark that God protected us in the desert. Pesach is a time of the spring blossom. And we also, obviously, celebrate the Exodus. So we do have a double meaning
You're
to
right.
many of our holidays.
Right.
The other very curious thing is that the Torah doesn't give a date for Shavuos. The date of Shavuos is day 50 of the counting of the Omer. Doesn't say, but every other holiday has a date, very clearly. It tells you Yom Kippur is the 10th of Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah is the 1st of Tishrei, it tells you that Pesach is the 15th of Nisan. Every single holiday, there's a date given, you know, calendar date. For Shavuos, there's never a calendar date given in the Torah. It's always, when you after you count 49 days, the 50th day is going to be Shavuos. Which is also a very interesting thing, why the Torah kind of doesn't even mention the date. Again, we know very clearly from Parshas Yisro, when at Mount Sinai, it's very clear that the Torah was given on the 6th of Sivan. If you do the math and you count from day 2 of Pesach, 50 days, you hit the 6th of Sivan. But still, the Torah kind of just seems to cover up that fact. It's a very strange thing. So what's the nature of this holiday? Why is the Torah so quiet about what seems to be its main purpose? And clearly it's the main purpose of the holiday. In our prayers, when the Shemona Esrei of Shavuos, we mention Zman, Matan, Torah, Sinai. This holiday is the time of the giving of the Torah. That's what we mention. And the custom of staying up all night to study Torah is because the time where God gave us the Torah. I mean, our observance of it, our tefillos, our prayers on Shavuos, are all kind of revolve around the God gave the Torah. The Torah reading we have on Shavuos describes God giving the Torah at Mount Sinai. So again, why is the Torah kind of not present that fact to us when it's describing the holiday? One other interesting fact before we get into some answers. Interesting fact is that in the times of the temple, when they used to establish the new month, the Rosh Chodesh, through witnesses coming and testifying they saw a new moon, it could have actually occurred that Shavuos was on the 5th of Sivan or 7th of Sivan. I mean, as we have our calendar nowadays our calendar is set, the Jewish calendar is set, and we know exactly, we have established as a standard how many days of Rosh Chodesh each month is, how long each month is. In the times of the temple, that wasn't true. Every single month could change, because you'd have witnesses come to the court, the high court, the Sanhedrin, testify when they saw a new moon, and it's possible that one month would be longer than a different month, because the new moon could appear on one of 2 days every single month. And in those days, you work out the math, it was very possible you could have had Shavuos on the 5th of Sivan, on the 6th, or on the 7th. So it would not always line up with the giving of the Torah. Sometimes Shavuos would be a day earlier or a day later. That's another interesting thing. So nowadays, it always lines up, it's our calendar is set, it's established, fixed in stone what our calendar looks like. But in the times of the temple, it could have been that Shavuos was a day before or after the day of the giving of the Torah. So another interesting thing about Shavuos, another mysterious fact. So what is the lesson? The Torah obviously has a lesson for us in presenting Shavuos in such a mysterious way. And again, this doesn't affect our observance of Shavuos, but it's the message, it's what the Torah is trying to present to us, a message, a profound message, in the fact that it hides the concept of the beginning of the Torah on Shavuos. So to try to get some answers, I'd like to start with the commentary of what's called the Akedah. He was a very early commentator. He wrote essentially on the Torah, very lengthy commentary describing, you know, many, many different philosophical points. He talks about halachic points at times. And he addresses this question. And he gives a few answers. I want to focus on one answer that he gives. In the book called The Akedah, he writes that Shavuos is a day which, of course, we're supposed to focus on the giving of the Torah. But the Torah hides that because remembering the Torah and remembering receiving the Torah can never be limited to one day on the calendar. The Torah is something which is constant to a Jew. We receive the Torah fresh daily, and I'll elaborate on that in a minute. But the Torah has to be something you can't just say, okay, the Torah was given to me on the 6th of Sivan, and the rest of the year, it's old news. I already have it. Other holidays, other events, so we're marking a historic event, which happened at one time. The message is a constant message, which was to draw inspiration from, but the event was a one-time event. The Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Exodus, it happened one time. We mark it every single year on Pesach. We focus a lot on it. It means a lot to us. It offers us really the fundamentals of what Judaism offers. But the event was a one-time event. Purim, Hanukkah, these are one-time events which we draw inspiration and lessons from yearly, but they're one-time events. Giving of the Torah can't be confined to one day on the calendar. So the Torah has to be an ongoing event in a Jew's life, both in terms of our attitude towards the Torah and in terms of how we study Torah, which, again, we'll discuss in a minute. It says in the book of Joshua, Yoshua, it says, Lo yomush sefer Torah zeh mipicha. You should not let the book of the Torah ever leave from your mouth. You're constantly discussing Torah. V'gisa bo yomam v'layla. And you should be thinking about the Torah day and night. It's a constant, ongoing process, the acceptance of the Torah. The rabbis tell us we should see the Torah as something fresh every single day. You don't look at it like, you know, this was last week's news. It's an old book. You know, I've been through it, been there, done that. You never view the Torah that way. Torah is always fresh. It's constantly being given to us. It's not an event in the past, but it's something which is always new. So, yes, we mark the day. It's an important day on the calendar. The Torah was given on the 6th of Sivan. But yet, we can't confine it to that day. If the Torah said, the holiday of Shavuos is to mark the giving of the Torah, so we would say the Torah is given on the 6th of Sivan period, and the rest of the year, it's old news. That's how we would view it. The Torah is telling us, never view it that way. Never view Torah study that way. Torah study is something always fresh, always new. Every single Jew is receiving the Torah in a fresh, new way, constantly. Another commentary, the Kli Yakar, a later commentary, see, he continues on this point. And he says that every single day we have to view as our own personal acceptance of the Torah. Every day we're accepting the Torah afresh. Every time I open up a sefer, open up a book of Torah, I'm receiving new Torah from God. That's what I'm doing, because it's Torah that I didn't know yet. Even if it's something I knew, every time you review a pastor's Torah, you find something new there. You find a new message, a new lesson. There's something more you're always taking from it. So it's not being confined as this is an old book that I'm gonna thumb through periodically, and if every time I open it, I'm reading something I already know about. We have to view Torah as something which is always something new to offer us. Every single time I read the same verse 10 times, that verse, the more I read it, the more I should gain from it, the more I should draw out of it. On Shavuos, the offering we bring is it says in the Torah, last week's Parsha, that after you count 49 days, on the 50th day you bring a new offering to God. So it actually refers to as a new offering. Most offerings aren't referred to as new. You bring an offering. You bring a sacrifice. But since you bring a new offering to God, because it's alluding to the fact that Torah has to always be new to us. On the day of Shavuos, we talk about things that are fresh, things that are new, because Torah is always fresh and new to us. Just as an aside, the other mysterious holiday you have in the Torah is Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, the Torah does not tell you the purpose of Rosh Hashanah. This tells you there's a day where you blow a shofar. That's all it tells you. We understand Rosh Hashanah to be a day of judgment. It's the day where it's the first day of the year, and God decides the happenings of the year on that day. So why is that mysterious? He actually says it's the same concept. You can never confine God's judgment to one day either. If I think God judges me one day a year, for the rest of the year I'm free, so then I'll do what I want the rest of the year, and Rosh Hashanah comes around, I'll be a good boy. Obviously that's not what God wants out of us. He wants us to be constantly understanding God's always watching, judgment is constant. Rosh Hashanah is the day that's designated for it, but God's judgment is always part of our lives. So that's the reason why the Torah kind of conceals the judgment of Rosh Hashanah as well. That's an aside, but it's the same concept. So what does this mean to us, this idea that Torah is fresh and new to us every single day? So first it means our attitude towards Torah study. We should always be excited. Something new and exciting is still exciting. You know, you're excited to do it, you're energized, you run to it, you know, you put yourself, you know, you're more diligent about it, you put your strength into it, your energy, because it's new, it's fresh, it's exciting. So it's our attitude, that's for sure. But there's a deeper point here as well, which is that Torah is something, we view the Torah, the book of Torah, as an endless spring of knowledge, meaning that the Torah is all the knowledge that God wanted to give over to the world. God is infinite. God's wisdom is infinite. And the Torah is appreciated on many, many levels. You know, you could have a four-year-old who studies the stories of the Torah. You could have a great sage who's been studying for 85 years and is still studying and drawing out more and more inspiration from the Torah, and everything in between. That's the Torah, something which is endless and infinite. And the same verse, the same pasuk that the four-year-old reads, the 85-year-old sage can read, but they're both able to draw out a message, an inspiration from it on their own level, because Torah is an endless, infinite spring of wisdom. It's infinite, it's endless. There's no end to what we can take from Torah. The rabbis tell us there is no beis medrash, there's no study hall that doesn't have what's called a chiddush in it. So we constantly call it a chiddush, which I think we discussed this about a few months ago in this class. But a chiddush is that whenever one studies Torah, they can always draw out something fresh. Chiddush comes from the word chadash, meaning new. And everybody has their own chidushim, their own novel thoughts they can draw out of the Torah text. Because every single person comes with their own perspective, every single person comes with their own life experience, with their own perspective of how to look at the world. And therefore, if we're loyal to the text, and we're honest with ourselves and with God, and we understand it in a certain way, that's another aspect of what God's trying to give us in the Torah. That's how we view it. The rabbis use an analogy. They say that Torah is kind of like a baby nursing from its mother. The more the baby nurses, the more milk the mother produces. The baby stops, the mother now doesn't produce any more milk. So the more that you study Torah, the more and more will come out at you. If you put Torah aside, so nothing fresh is going to come out of the Torah. But the more we study Torah, the more inspiration, the more wisdom, the more lessons jump out at us and impact us. That's the analogy which the rabbis give us. And it's a very interesting thing, because if you just read works of Torah written throughout history, starting from the written Torah at Mount Sinai, and then you come through our very day. So if you look at every single generation, every single locality, from different people, there's different nuances, different styles of Torah thoughts which are offered. What I mean by that is originally what we had was just the written text of the Torah, and that's what God gave to Moshe at Har Sinai. And then you move on from there, and then you read the commentaries that are written in the... So first you look at the Talmud. So that was a very unique understanding of Torah, which was part of our old tradition, which they presented to us through the words of the Talmud. Then you have commentaries. You have the early commentaries, Rishonim. You have people who lived the Rambam. You have Rashi. You have Ramban, Nachmanides. You have all these early commentators who lived, let's say, 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th centuries. And you see there's a certain style of how they write. There's a certain message which they try to draw out of the Torah, and they present to us. And then you move on. You move on to later commentaries. You move on to commentaries a little bit more, let's say the 17th, 18th centuries, and there's a different take they have in the Torah. It's not, obviously it's loyal to the text and to the earlier stages, but they present more to us. And they give us more messages. They give us more inspiration. And then you look at a book written last week, and it's a very different than the book written in the 10th century, but also it's still God's wisdom, so God's Torah, presented to us in a different way, and there's different messages given from it. The Torah is always compounding. There's more and more what we're bringing out from God's Torah, because it's infinite. It also works in terms of locality. You look at commentaries written in Spain, or commentaries written in Italy, commentaries written in Iraq, commentaries written in America, you see a difference. And it's not that, we don't want to say that the sages were influenced by the secular society around them, but on the other hand, based on their unique perspective, they're able to pull out of the Torah a new message for us. So I think a great example of this, if you ever look at the commentary of Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, he lived in Germany. He was very much the time of the reform in Germany, when the Jewish reform began, and he was fighting against them. And Rav Hirsch's commentary, there's definitely a style of thought which is very unique to him. You can sense kind of a thought which, you sense the German influence in his thought. You can see who he's writing for, who he's writing against. It's very clear. But this is a true and powerful aspect of Torah, which he was able to draw out of the Torah based on his position in history and his location. Every single person has an own unique perspective on life. The Gemara tells us that just like our faces look different, so our thoughts, our minds work different. Everyone has a different way in which they approach situations. Every human being is unique. So if we both study the same part of the Torah, and you say it means X, I say it means Y, so it doesn't mean that we're both wrong. If we're both being loyal to the text, we both fear God, we're both being loyal to tradition, and we see something different jumping out at us from a part of the Torah. So those could be two true aspects that God locked into the Torah, and now we're both drawing out based on our own perspectives. Because Torah is something that's constantly being given to us. It's a constant fresh giving of the Torah to every single individual. So the that's how we can view it as constant. And it's very clear, the more you become familiar with different texts of Torah, of commentaries, of different books, different svarim, you see that there's very unique perspectives given from different people. And we don't say, well, he was wrong and he was right. We could say that it's all true, again, assuming that it's loyal to our traditions, it's loyal to the text, and the person who wrote it as a God-fearing person trying to be honest with himself and with God. And those are very important prerequisites to say everything's right. You know, it could be a very dangerous thought to say that everyone, whatever you say is fine. Obviously, that's not true. It has to be this person is in line with our tradition. Starting about Sinai and onwards, the person is a God-fearing person using to the best of their ability, trying to pull out the message of the Torah. That's what it has to be. But it's an ongoing process. Torah is not something which is confined to a one-time, God gave it one time in Mount Sinai and it's over. There's always more to draw up Torah, because since God's nature is infinite, and Torah is God's knowledge, the knowledge of Torah is also infinite. And the Torah which applies to us today, sometimes there's certain, I mean, both in halachic ways and in philosophical ways it applies. Halachic ways, obviously, there's modern questions of halacha, which there weren't questions 500 years ago because this didn't exist. A car, a microwave, heart surgery, these types of things were not questions halachically because they weren't in existence back then. So we have to now take the Torah and draw out new rulings from the Torah, which were there, but we have to now pull them out. Everything in the Torah was given at Mount Sinai. In the book that God gave to Moshe at Mount Sinai, and the oral tradition alongside it, contained it all. But it's up to us in every generation to pull out what's needed for our generation. And the messages are constantly being, that's why every single generation, more books are being written, and the libraries are becoming wider and wider and larger, but it's not because the old generation got it wrong, it's not because we got it right, it's because we've just now pulled out more from what's there, because there's always more to pull out from the Torah, just like that nursing baby, the mother keeps producing more milk as long as the baby's nursing. That's how we have to view Torah study. So every single person has their own perspective on Torah. Every single person is going to have their own unique approach to pull out their message. Every country, based on the situation at the time, there's going to be people in that country pull out different messages. The American mind might look at Torah differently than the Spanish mind. And it's not saying that's because we've been infiltrated by American thoughts, but it's because God put us in the situation, and therefore, because of our unique situation, we're able to kind of approach Torah from our perspective and bring out the messages which we need for our day. So it's the concept that Torah is constantly being given day in and day out, generation to generation. You can't just say it was given one time and it's all done. Now obviously, God presenting it to the world happened on that day, one time to Moshe. That's when God presented the book to the world. But God then gave us the tools to take the book he gave us and draw out infinite messages which are constantly coming out day in and day out. There's no Beis Medrash without a Chiddush. Every single study hall is willing to have novel thought in every single day. That's what the Gemara tells us, because Torah is an ongoing process. So that is the message which we take from Shavuos not being labeled as the day of giving of the Torah. The holiday is labeled with other labels, but it's never connected to the giving of the Torah. Because the giving of the Torah, in our minds, the approach has to be it's an ongoing, constant process, and we can't just celebrate it as a one-time event and old news from the Sixth of Sivan. But the main celebration of Shavuos is the giving of the Torah. So we have to understand now, what are these other names it has? Now let's go the other way around. If the main celebration is the giving of the Torah, we understand why the Torah kind of concealed that fact. But why does the Torah give it all these other labels? What's the significance of it being the Harvest Festival? Why is it following the 49 days of the counting of the Omer? What's the significance of the new fruits? What are the other names given for it? How do those fit into the context of Shavuos? Is this all clear up until now? Mm-hmm. Yeah? Okay, good. I just said a lot very fast, so let's make sure everyone got it clear. Good.
One thing I'd like to throw in there, before you talk about Akiva, it seems if we personify the Torah, and we can say that it's humility, and that's why it doesn't speak about itself.
And the Torah doesn't speak... The Torah doesn't say, celebrate me. Right? Right? That's an interesting way to look at it. Yeah, it's an interesting way to look at it. There is actually a different answer to the question that I wasn't going to get into, but just a quick, kind of completes to that. There's an old question discussed by the old Jewish philosophers. Can the Torah command you to believe in God? Because if you don't believe in God, then the command's not going to do anything for you. If you believe in God, then you believe in God. So can the Torah say you must believe in God? Does that make sense? Is there such a command in the Torah, a mitzvah, one must believe in God? It's a prerequisite. But so there's actually a debate amongst the early commentators, you know, the Rambam and the Ramban. There's a debate, can the Torah actually give us a command to believe in God? Because it seems to be that it'll be an endless loop. Well, if I don't believe in God, then the command's meaningless to me. If I believe in God, I don't need the command. So that's a discussion. But they compare it to this question about Shavuos, because if the Torah is now I understand this clearly with Shavuos, but they say that if the Torah is presenting, if Shavuos they were celebrating the giving of the Torah, but the rules of the Torah preceded the giving of the Torah, so how can you celebrate the giving of the Torah when it precedes the giving of the Torah? So you can think about that. I'm not so clear on that loop, but there's another loop involved. Those are like these types of logical equations, you can work with it. But the loose claim is saying the Torah doesn't want to talk about itself. The Torah is saying, you celebrate other things, don't celebrate me. It's a mystery of humility. So it's an interesting thought. So now let's think the other way. If the main celebration of Shavuos is the giving of the Torah, then we understand why the Torah may conceal that fact, being that it wants us to understand the giving of the Torah is a constant process. But then, what are the other names given? Those other names given to Shavuos seemingly should fit into the context of the day. So let's first talk about the name that we're most familiar with, which is Shavuos. We all refer to it as Shavuos, the holiday of Shavuos. In davening, the text, the actual liturgy is called Chag HaShavuos. That's how we refer to it. So, and literally that means the holiday of weeks. And simply, we would understand that because it follows the 7 weeks of the Omer. So it's the holiday which you celebrate after 7 weeks. That's what it is, the holiday of weeks. Now, it's a strange thing because every other holiday is labeled for the holiday itself. You know, we talk about Pesach, we refer to as Chag HaMatzos, because it's the day where we eat matzah. Even the word Pesach, there was a Karban Pesach which was brought, it's the day where God passed over the Jews. I mean, all the names we give for Pesach refer to the actual holiday itself. Sukkot is the day where it's the holiday we sit in the sukkah, so the name very much fits the holiday. Shavuos isn't referring to the day, it's referring to what happened the past 7 weeks. So we're naming Shavuos not for what the day is about, we're naming it for what happened prior to the day. So it's a very funny thing. So Rav Hirsch points out that what's the message that's telling us? What is Hashem telling us by calling it Shavuos? He's teaching us that the revelation of Mount Sinai that we celebrate is not that we receive the Torah, but it's that we as human beings prepared ourselves to receive the Torah. I mean, the name of the holiday is named for the preparations. The 7 weeks preparation prior to Shavuos, which we're supposed to now be preparing ourselves, we're supposed to be working on our character, working on our midos, getting ourselves excited to receive God's Torah on Shavuos. That's what the 7 weeks are for, linking Pesach to Shavuos. So the main celebration of Shavuos is not the fact that God gave us His book, but it's rather that we were worthy of receiving the book, that we prepared ourselves, we got ourselves ready. It's the preparation. So that's what Rav Hirsch points out, that we have to understand that embracing the Torah is a gradual process. If God just plunked down the Torah on people who weren't ready, so then it wouldn't have done much for the world, because people who received it couldn't do much with it. They're not ready for it. The fact that the Jews got themselves ready and prepared and developed themselves and became more holy and more pure and more refined and received the Torah, that's the celebration. And for us as well, we have to have that message that Shavuos is not about the fact that God gave a Torah, but it's about the fact that we're ready to receive the Torah. And that's what is a challenge to us, because when Shavuos comes around, and we understand that every single Shavuos, it's like God gives the Torah once again, afresh, so that we prepare ourselves for it, are we ready for it? Because what we celebrate is not that the Torah exists, we celebrate that we as human beings and as Jews have some sort of connection with it. And if we didn't prepare ourselves, we have no connection. So it's in order to embrace Torah, there's a gradual process, day by day, step by step, which we have to get ourselves ready, and then we can embrace the Torah. So it applies on a national level, it applied to the Jews historically when they were left Egypt, and they worked for 7 weeks before they got the Torah to become better people, until they reached a level of unity at Mount Sinai, got along with each other and received God's Torah, reached a level of purity, the Torah tells us, reached a level of desire to connect to God. But it applies to us in our daily lives. Now, we as Jews, we all strive, we want to be able to have a connection with God and His Torah. And how does that work? How do we do that? So we can't just say, load it on me. That does not how it works. God plucking it down on my head is not going to do much for me. But if I prepare myself, if we understand that connecting to God and Torah is a step-by-step process, that you have to become a more refined person, work on your character, work on your understanding of the ideals of Judaism, what it means to connect to the spiritual world, to purity, to goodness, and you slowly, step by step, prepare yourself, then you're ready to, now you're worthy, you're ready to take God's Torah. When God plunks it down your head, it actually is meaningful to you because now you've prepared yourself. So the holiday of Shavuos, Rav Hirsch says, is celebrating not that God gave a Torah, but that the human being has got themselves ready and are worthy of receiving a Torah. So we refer to it based on the Shavuos, based on the weeks preceding, rather than the day itself. So we refer to it as Hagah Shavuos because the weeks preceding it are what build up to that point. And that's our pride and joy. Our pride and joy is not that we have a Torah, but that we have actually put forth our own personal efforts and connected to God's Torah. That's our pride and joy. It's a very interesting thing. In the world of sacrifices and offerings in the temple, so a lot of it's kind of foreign to us. You know, we don't always understand how offerings worked, and you know, that's a different discussion, which hopefully we'll get to at one point. But there's a very unique offering offered on Shavuos. There's the two, like I guess, the two common offerings in the temple. One is called a shlamim, one's called an ola. Ola is totally burnt upon the altar. It's, you know, everything is burnt. A human being doesn't touch it, doesn't eat it. It's all burnt on the altar. A shlamim, which we refer to as a peace offering or a complete offering, that was shared between the altar, the kohanim, and the owner. So any normal Israelite could bring a shlamim. He would eat part of it, the kohen would eat part of it, and part of it's burned on the altar. So it goes all around. The interesting thing is that never throughout the year is there a communal shlamim. Every communal offering throughout the entire year in the temple was an ola, meaning that it was totally burnt up on the altar. There's never a communal shlamim. There could be a chatas. A chatas is where there's a sin offering. There are communal sin offerings that a kohen would take part in. But never a communal shlamim. Yet on Shavuos, you have a communal shlamim. It's the one time a year. It's an exception. It's the one time a year where there's a communal shlamim offering, which means that it's offered like a shlamim, and it was shared by the altar and by the kohanim. And that never happened the entire year. So there's a message involved in that, which is that the giving of the Torah, which happened on Shavuos, involves the human being. Like we just said, it's all about a person preparing themselves to connect to the holiness of the Torah. It's not about just God plunking the Torah down in our heads. So therefore, you have this communal shlamim, which represents the entire Jewish people kind of joining in this meal with God. Some goes on the altar, some's eaten by the kohanim as the representatives of the entire Jewish people. And that shows that Torah is a two-way street. It's not just that God throws it into the world and says, do what you want with it. It's that we got ourselves ready, we prepared ourselves, God gave it to us as worthy people to receive the Torah, and through that we can accomplish the mission of the Torah in this world. There's another message, a very similar message, which the Gemara discusses, what's the appropriate way to observe a Yom Tov? Should you spend the entire day in prayer and study? Should you have a festive meal? What's the right thing to do? And there's actually different, we all understand the festive meal and Yom Tov, that's how we observe Yom Tov. But the Gemara has a debate about it. Maybe a Yom Tov should be a day just for totally immersed in prayer, totally immersed in Torah study, and you kind of ignore your own physical needs. Maybe it should be like that. There's an opinion in the Gemara that says that could be an option. But the Gemara says everybody agrees, no matter what you think about other holidays, everybody agrees on Shavuos, you must have a festive meal, you must take care of yourself on Shavuos. So it could be on Pesach, some opinions that say you can spend the entire day in prayer, skip the meal, no problem. Could be on Sukkot, you can skip the meal, have it, pray, and you don't have to sit down to a festive meal and make something out of it. But on Shavuos, everybody says you have to sit down, and you have to have what's called lachem. You have to do something for yourself on Shavuos. Everyone agrees to that, no matter how you look at every other Yom Tov. So again, that's the message, that the giving of the Torah has to be a two-way street. It's not just God throwing it down on us, but we're involved in it. We're part of that process. The Jew has to prepare themselves for their mission. So we as human beings, we have to, on Shavuos, we give ourselves something else. It's our treat. We deserve a treat on Shavuos because we prepared ourselves to connect to the Torah. So everybody agrees, even if you could fast the entire day on Pesach, on Shavuos you have to sit down and give yourself a treat. You have to have a nice meal on Shavuos because as a human being, you prepared yourself to connect to the Torah. Therefore, you have to involve yourself in the celebration as well. So that's the concept of Shavuos. It's about the preparation. There's a few other titles given to Shavuos. The rabbis call Shavuos a different name entirely. The rabbis call Shavuos, throughout the Mishnah and the Talmud, it's referred to as Atzeres. So we're familiar with Shmini Atzeres. Shmini Atzeres, we usually translate as the eighth day of gathering. I guess that's how we translate it. That's the eighth day after Sukkot. But Shavuos in the Gemara is referred to as Atzeres. You see the word in a Mishnah or in a Gemara, it says Atzeres, it means Shavuos. So why the rabbis call it Atzeres? It's a funny thing. Why the rabbis call it Atzeres. The concept of atzeres, atzeres is a day of gathering, it's a culmination as well. The word otzer, in modern Hebrew, otzer is to stop. I think the stop sign in Israel says otzer on it, I think. Atzor, right? To stop. Atzor, right? So atzeres comes from a root which means to stop. It's a day of culmination. So Shmini Atzeres is the culmination of the entire high holiday period. You had Elul, you had Rosh Hashanah, you had Yom Kippur, you had Sukkot, and the final day is the holiday of Shmini Atzeres in the Torah. It's the day where it's the culmination, it's the high point, it's where you take it all in. All your experiences of the past few weeks are all taken in on Shmini Atzeres. That's how we view that holiday. Atzeres can also mean to, it's gathering, it can be storing. Atzeres can also mean to store something, because you're storing in all the inspiration of all the Yom Tovim you've experienced, you store it in on Shmini Atzeres. So Shavuos is the Atzeres of this period of the year. We had Pesach, we had the counting of the Omer, now we have Shavuos. And we look at Shavuos as a time of a culmination of Pesach. There is a build-up. The Ramban, Nachmanides, goes to the extent, and he says that the counting of the Omer is kind of equivalent to Chol Moed. You have Pesach, you have, it's usually in like Sukkot Pesach, we have Chol Moed, the intermediary days. You could actually view the entire 7 weeks of counting the Omer as like a Chol Moed period, and Shavuos is the culmination of the Pesach festival. That's how the Ramban says you can view the counting of the Omer in Shavuos. So what does that mean to us? Pesach is a holiday of freedom. It's a time we were freed from Egypt. It's, we call it the holiday of our liberation, of our freedom. So that means that Shavuos is the culmination of our holiday of freedom. That's what that would mean. So the rabbis tell us, what's this, the freedom of Shavuos? Why do we refer to Shavuos as a day of freedom? If it's the high point of Pesach, that's to do with freedom. So what's the concept? So they tell us that Torah itself grants somebody freedom. There's physical freedom from bondage on Pesach. But just because you're freed from physical bondage doesn't mean that you're free. Somebody who is a slave to their personal lusts. Somebody who's a slave to money. Somebody who can't make the right choice. Even though I should choose X, I choose Y because I can't control myself. We're not in control. That's not freedom. Nobody is there with a gun to your head. There's no slave driver whipping you in the back, forcing you to work. But if you can't make the choice you want to make, if you cannot free yourself from your own personal desires, even if they may be the wrong thing for you, that's also a slave. We're slaves to ourselves. Yitzhara, we call that, we're slaves to Yitzhara at times. And we become it's also slavery. So Shavuos, when God gives the Torah, is a time where the Torah is our tool to free us from that type of slavery. The Torah teaches us how to gain control over ourselves, over our desires, to make the right choices, choose right from wrong, choose good from evil. That's what the Torah teaches us. And one who involves themselves in Torah and in mitzvah, studies more Torah, is eventually able to grab onto more self-control and be free to make the right choices in life. So the rabbis tell us, the Torah says that God, the Moshe was given tablets from God, and it says that there was wording charus al luchos. There was wording etched into the tablets. So the word charus, etched in, is the same letters as the word chirus. It's freedom. Same letters in Hebrew. Because the rabbis say etched into the tablets of the Torah is freedom. That's where you find true freedoms in the Torah. So there's freedom in Egypt, which is freedom from physical bondage, but yet the Jews were still slaves to themselves. And you get the Torah is the tool to free you from other types of bondage. That's what the Torah does for you. So that's charus aluchos, true freedom, freedom from the Yetzer Hara, freedom from choosing wrong. And it says ultimately even freedom from death, the rabbis tell us, is eternal life. The ticket to eternal life is the Torah. It's to be totally absorbed in the Torah. It gives someone a ticket to eternity. So that's where the true freedom comes through Torah study. So Shavuos acts as an atzeres, as a culmination day for this period of freedom. Because we move from bondage in Egypt, slavery, to physical freedom, to spiritual freedom, to emotional freedom, the freedom to make the right choices. And that's what Shavuos marks for us as Atzeres. I want to add in just one more point. There's a Gemara. It's in the Jerusalem Talmud, the Yerushalmi. The Gemara points out that if you look at the description of the offerings of every holiday, every single holiday includes within it a sin offering. So every holiday, Rosh Hashanah, Kippur, Pesach, Sukkot, Shavuos too, they all include a sin offering. There's a communal sin offering offered in the temple in Jerusalem on every single holiday. The funny thing about Shavuos, another anomaly of Shavuos, is that the Torah discusses the sin offering, doesn't mention the word sin offering. Every single holiday there is, you bring a goat as a sin offering. It says, Irizim Echad L'chatas. You bring goats for sin offerings. But yet on Shavuos, it says, you bring a goat, But doesn't say it's a sin offering. We know it's a sin offering. It doesn't say the word sin offering. So the Jerusalem Talmud tells us, why is that? Because if somebody commits to the Torah, then God gives them a full atonement. There's no sin. If somebody's totally committed to the Torah, meaning that you've taken into yourself, you've committed yourself to Torah, which elevates you above sin, and allows you to make the right choices in life. So God says, because of that commitment, you're totally committed to my Torah, I'm going to give you a clean slate. That's what the Talmud Yerushalmi says. That's what it says the Jerusalem Talmud. So we usually view Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur as a time of atonement and to clean our slate. But Shavuos has that power as well. The Torah does not say the word sin on Shavuos, because somebody who's totally through and through committed to Torah and to Torah study, God says, I'm giving you a clean slate because of your commitment to my tool which I gave you to make the right choices. Therefore, I'm going to disregard the wrong choices from the past and look towards the future. That's how I understand it. So it's the commitment to Torah kind of elevates us above sin. Therefore, in Shavuos, with the proper commitment, we can be elevated above sin as well. So that's why the Torah leaves out that word sin offering. It is a sin offering, but leaves out the word sin to teach us that Shavuos is a day we're elevated above sin. The final name of Shavuos, which we didn't discuss yet, is it's called the Harvest Festival. So what's the concept of, in context of what we're discussing, what does it mean, what's the idea of a harvest? So obviously, it is the harvest season. In Israel, this is the harvest season. They celebrate the harvest. It was an agricultural celebration. But in a deeper way, what's the concept of harvest? So a farmer, he plows the land, he plants his seeds, he spends months and months taking care of the crops. His goal is the harvest. Once the farmer harvests the crops, he's very excited because he put in all this hard work for months and months on end. And finally, he sees the fruits of his labor, literally, and he sees the harvest. It's there. The harvest is there. He's very excited. That's the purpose of it all. The giving of the Torah was God's purpose of creation. In the very beginning of the book of Bereishis, in describing creation, it says every single day after God creates what He created for that very day. So it always says, you know, it was evening, it was morning, the first day, evening, morning, second day, evening, morning, third day, etc. On the sixth day of creation, it says it a little bit differently. Vayeravai Boker Yom HaShishi. It says, I translated it wrong before. Every day it just says Yom Echad, Yom Sheni. It leaves out the Hey. The Hey is the word V in Hebrew. So it would say a first day, a second day, a third day, a fourth day. That's how every day of creation is described. On the sixth day it says the sixth day. It has the letter Hey in Hashishi. So on day four it just says Yom Revi, a fourth day. On day five, Yom Hamishi, a fifth day. On the sixth day it says the sixth day, Yom Hashishi. So the rabbis say, why is there an extra letter? Why does it say the letter Hey? Why is the word V there on the sixth day? So the rabbis teach us, this is cited by Rashi, that, you know, even though after the sixth day, everything in this world was created, but yet, the world was not yet ready to go. Because everything was only created for one purpose, which is for God to give the Torah to the world. And until the sixth day, meaning a different sixth day, there's another sixth day in history, the sixth day of Sivan, the month of Sivan, the day where God gave the Torah to the Jewish people. Until that sixth day, the world's not complete. So there's a reference in creation that the purpose of it all is for a different sixth day. So there's a sixth day of creation when God created the animals and human beings. That was the sixth day of creation. But it's labeled Hashishi to teach you that not so fast. The world's not complete yet. The world's kind of in limbo at this point. Until 2,000 years later, when God would give the Torah to the Jews on Mount Sinai on a different sixth day, on the sixth day of the month of Sivan. And that's what that's what the world was waiting for. So just like when you plant crops, if you can't harvest them, the crops are worthless and all your work is for nothing. So the creation of the world, God says, unless I can give my Torah to the Jewish people, the creation of my world is worthless. And God's kind of harvesting His work on Shavuos when He gives us the Torah. So that's another deeper meaning to being the harvest festival. Because the whole purpose of the world was at that point of when God gave the Torah. So it reaches a time of purpose. So that's those are the different names of Shavuos. So this is to take it back. Now the main celebration of Shavuos is certainly that God gave the Torah. That's concealed in the Torah. It's a very powerful message that the giving of the Torah is a constant, everyday message that we can always be drawing more and more inspiration from the Torah. It's never old news. It's always something new. It's always going to be exciting. So that's the main celebration. Shavuos, name Shavuos, is alluding to the fact that we prepared ourselves for Shavuos. It's the preparation, the weeks in advance. The idea of Atzeres is that Shavuos is the culmination of a whole period of freedom from Pesach until now. And it's the harvest festival in that we celebrate a physical harvest, but we celebrate that the world now has reached a point of purpose. The world has reached God's intention for the creation. It was reached on Shavuos when God gave the Torah to the Jewish people. That's how we view the day. So for us, it's for us to understand the power of that day, the day where God gave us His Torah, gave us an eternal tool to make the right choices, to elevate ourselves, and to constantly be drawing out the wisdom and inspiration for life. Any questions? Yeah.